This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Getting dressed for success sounds great until you see that your clothes are wrinkled. The Conair Turbo Extreme Steam Steam and Iron 2-in-1 is your solution. It's the most powerful handheld steamer with advanced heat technology, so it obliterates wrinkles with turbocharged dry steam quickly and easily. It's ready almost instantly and also works without steam as a dry iron. To get your wrinkle solution today, go to Amazon and search for Conair Turbo Extreme Steam and look for the Steam and Iron 2-in-1.
Do you import and export goods in and out of the UK? If so, then look no further for all your logistics and freight forwarding needs than Lila International Logistics, owned and run by West Ham fans. Lila, that's L-I-L-A, International Logistics, provides businesses with affordable import and export rates for sending and receiving products anywhere around the world, whether it be by air freight, sea freight, courier or road freight. Lila provide a bespoke service for shipments, so you ain't being passed between departments and you have a direct contact at all times 24/7 for shipments. Check out their website at www.lilalogistics.co.uk for more info.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, and ex-WH employee. The Hammers are through to the fourth round of the FA Cup after beating Premier League opposition in Leeds. We'll be talking about that game, the development of Nikola Vlasic, Kidderminster away, Norwich at home, and some exciting events for your diary before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. Leeds at home is a horrible third round draw, really, isn't it? I mean, in the early rounds, you want a lower league side, and we've got one next, which we'll come to. But first, we had to beat a Premier League side to get there, and beat them we did. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, it was a solid professional performance. I thought, mate, you know, did the job. We don't need to go out and batter them. We don't need to go out and play our best football. You know, the main thing was just to get through to the next round and get through with minimal drama. You know, as we got through, as far as I'm aware, with no injuries, you know, no suspensions, nothing controversial. Just did the job. Comfortable 2-0 win. Don't think we were really under much pressure throughout the whole game. And happy days. Looking forward to the next round. So, yeah, job done, basically, I think.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, look, granted, we didn't set the world on fire, but generally speaking, like you said, I think you're right. It was solid professional performance. I think we dominated the majority of the game, created chances and kept a clean sheet. I mean, what more do we want from a difficult cup game? And I kept hearing about this depleted Leeds side, but when you look at our best 11, as in the best 11 available that you would pick, we had 7 players missing yesterday. So we were pretty depleted ourselves in that respect. So I thought it was a good performance. What did you make of the first goal? Because I'm not sure I've seen a more confusing scenario, to be honest. One that was ultimately settled by VAR, but that decision was contested by some. Was it offside? How did you see it?
No, mate. I kind of almost gave up trying to understand it, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I just kind of just accepted it and didn't really question it. I mean, I think the argument is whether Bowen was the one that was offside, but then Bowen didn't touch the ball as far as I can understand. But then he's not in sphere of play, but then he's right in front of the keeper. So I don't know how he can't be in sphere of play. I don't really know. I really don't understand the logic on it, to be honest with you. And I think whatever comment I make on it is going to have people say, yeah, but blah, 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 blah. So I'm just going to say I trusted VAR and the ref for once. So I don't really have an opinion on it.
It's one of the messiest offside discussions I think I've ever seen. Genuinely, I don't know. I've looked at it so many times, and I literally don't know the answer. And I don't know if it's because I don't understand the offside rule these days. It just seems so overcomplicated, doesn't it?
Well, that's the thing, and it is getting overcomplicated with all these different lines and different body parts that you can play the ball with. And did this guy get in the way of that guy? Did it deflect off him? And did it deflect off that? It's almost like too complicated a rule now. I just think there should be a basic thing that any part of your body that is substantially offside is offside. You know, if it's like, you know, like a millimetre. I just think it's just so stupid. It doesn't make a difference to whether that goal, you know, a millimetre further back is not going to make a difference to whether that goal has scored that goal or not. I just think they need to get this rule. They need to take it. You need an offside rule because you can't have, you could have goal hangers constantly and just be ridiculous, but you just got to be a bit more liberal on the take of it, I think, because it's just getting stupid. All these lines and these delays and stuff. The game is just as much about offside now as it is about anything else.
Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It seems to feature in most games, doesn't it? And it can be a headline stealer when it should.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it shouldn't. It should be a part of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Just make it simple. Look, if it's a guy, if it's beyond the, you know, maybe say a foot, you know, a foot's difference or something like that. If it's beyond that, then yes, they're offside. But if the attacker's slightly ahead of the defender, but it's not going to make that much difference to the goal, then just let it go. I think it's meant to be an entertainment business where things are meant to be and goals are meant to be fun. You know, obviously they're not fun when they go against your team, but it's just getting so complicated now. And you can tell by the pundits, you know, the pundits all say different things about it and they don't know what the right answer is. At the end of the day, a rule is a rule and a rule shouldn't be open to misinterpretation because a rule should be factual and be very clear as to how you do it. It's like, you know, in anything, if you have rules in life, you know, rules that we live by to stop ourselves getting in trouble with the law. If there was that much variation and needed that much kind of scrutiny to everything, you'd never get any kind of, everything would take forever to A, for people to understand, and B, to prosecute people. It's like that with football. Like how it shouldn't be that difficult to know the answer to. And the reason it is because the rule is too complicated.
That's right. It's so complicated that the fucking refs don't understand it. And that's the problem. And
exactly.
Like everything else, we've just overcomplicated the sport. And I've said this before, it almost seems like, you know, the hierarchy get together and they just look at ways of trying to improve, in inverted commas, the game that doesn't need improving. You know, if you go back to the 80s and the 90s, for example, just take the rules back to then, you know, because it was so much more simpler then and so much more enjoyable. But the more they try and tamper with it, the more complicated it gets. And it just ruins the game. And I mean, look at the amount of time it took to fucking make that decision as well. It's because they didn't know the answer. And it took the euphoria out of the goal because I was convinced it was going to be disallowed because my gut reaction trying to make sense of the replay is that it was offside. Yeah. Thankfully, it wasn't. But it's just an ongoing fucking discussion. And there's me talking with frustration at a goal that's given for West Ham. So that goes to show how annoying this technology is. Do you know what I mean?
100%, 100%, mate. And, you know, of course, I think goal line technology has been superb. You know, you can't criticise that.
No.
So I would keep that as an improvement from the 80s and 90s. I think you can use VAR when it's a obvious decision. But even then, you know, it's on the penalties and stuff where it's clearly a foul. They haven't given it. Even then, they get it wrong. But I think you could keep it for fouls and stuff. I think you can even keep it for offside. But like I said, you just got to draw the line with these stupid little lines. Literally, excuse the pun, you've got to basically just say, look, if the guy is, you know, half a yard or a foot or whatever ahead of the other person, then we'll just get rid of it. And it doesn't matter what part of the body or you say it's a goal screen part of the body, either way, and you just make it clearer like that. Just make, I don't know what to do really, but they have made it just so complicated now that it's just stupid.
Mm.
I mean, imagine being a ref or a linesman or whatever, when you don't have VAR technology, you'll be forever thinking you got it wrong now because you won't actually understand what
you meant to give it. I know. I don't understand the point of the linesman anymore. I don't know why they get employed. What is their purpose now? There is no purpose.
Exactly.
I don't know. It just opens up a whole can of worms. It takes a conversation into so many different areas. all born from overcomplicating the sport and making changes that didn't need making. And I just find it so frustrating. And it's like I said, if I'm having a moan up about it when it's gone in West Ham's favour, I think that tells you everything you need to know about this poxy technology.
Exactly.
But great to see Manu get on the score sheet again. Vlasic nearly did. And in my opinion, I think we're seeing signs of a good player there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that was his best performance for us. I mean, what I liked about him as well was that he was like regularly tracking back. He was fighting for the ball. He was holding it up well. He looked like he was stronger. He was much more prepared for the league as such. And he seems to be a lot more aware of kind of his role within the team now. I think when he came on a couple of times, he just looked a little bit lost in the early days. But now I think he's becoming more aware of the team. And I think Moyes is beginning to have the same impact on him as he did on Benrahma, because Benrahma had similar issues when he first joined West Ham. And I think now, having had a decent period of time behind him, he's looking very useful. And I think also it's coincided very well with Benrahma going to the African nations, that he's the obvious replacement, and a replacement that I think hopefully in the next month or so before Benrahma comes back can actually establish himself and show that he's as worthy as a first team place as the other players in his position.
I like him. I mean, every time I've seen him, good close control. When he gets the ball, he doesn't go hiding. He's tenacious, decent movement. We saw that for his goal against Watford. Physically strong. I do like him. And like everyone else, he needs time. Players need games. And I think we just need an element of patience. What doesn't help him is the price tag, really, with West Ham fans, because you see £30 million being spent, you know, to clubs in the top four. That's just a squad player who you barely see other than the odd run out. But with him to West Ham, that's a big fee. So I think he gets a little bit of pressure from fans, from high expectations. But, you know, I remember Thierry Henry being awful for the first 6 months of his time at Arsenal. But, you know, you've got to allow a player to come in, get used to a new country, new teammates, new philosophy, new style of play in the Premier League, and, you know, a run of games. And I think that's what we're going to see now Benny's gone. So that could be a blessing for Vlasic in that respect. But I do like him. And for £30 million, you know, I think we've got a good squad player there. And who knows, with a bit of time, it could be a good first team player. But I'm pleased to have him here. And like I say, another good performance there. And what I like about him is when ex-players have come out, not ex-players, teammates of his have come out and said how incredibly hard he works in training, which I think speaks volumes. And I think you've heard something similar, Rex. He's a good lad, by all accounts. Right.
I mean, you could see by Declan's reaction when he scored against Watford that he tweeted that he was really pleased for him. So I think the players do often do like him a lot. Yeah.
Jared put the game to bed with a great finish. And shortly after, we released our Man of the Match poll, where Vlasic got 64% of the votes, followed by Jared with 14%. And Manu with 12%. Interestingly, Declan Rice only got 2% of the votes. That's just 1% in front of Yarmolenko, who spent a whole 9 seconds on the pitch, there or thereabouts. And I suspect a little bit of a piss take there, by the way. But that's still quite low. Are you surprised by that?
Declan?
Yeah.
Not really, no, because I think Vlasic was clearly the best player. I think he deserved it. I think the one I'd probably say I was more surprised at being lower is Antonio. I mean, Antonio set up both goals and works the lines really, really well. I thought he played a really good game and he had a low percentage. I think Decker's percentage is low, but that's not a reflection saying that he played badly. It's just that by normal standards, he usually dominates the games and is clearly one of the contenders for Man of the Match. Actually, this game, yes, he did his business, did his job, played well, but other players stood out by their normal standards more so. I mean, I think the reason Vlasic got so much more was not necessarily because he was head and shoulders better than Declan. I mean, he played well, but, you know, we as I've always said with Declan, there's a bar that he's set and we kind of expect that performance, whereas Vlasic is kind of working his way into the team now. Probably the expectations on him are lower than they are Declan at this point. So I think it's all relative, and I think I agree with the poll, yeah.
Fair enough. Here's a stat for you, X. Because we beat Leeds in the third round, That is the first time we've progressed beyond the first stage of three major competitions in one season since the 65-66 season.
Really? How about that? Wow, what a stat. That's interesting. I've never heard that stat. That's I don't know if that's amazing. It's in how well we're doing now or how terrible we've been in the past. I guess so. I guess we've never really been in Europe, have we, much? So there's not been that.
That's what it comes down to, is the European appearances.
Yeah, so that's probably why it goes back so far. But yeah, he is good. And hopefully it's an indication of the shift in stature of the club now that is what we expect. And I mean, touch wood. You know, I know shocks can happen, but you'd like to think we'd beat Kidderminster, so we could be even further in the round. And I know I don't want to jinx it, because believe me, I've been there many times when West Ham have lost to lower league opposition. But I just hope we're a lot more professional and equipped now. And what a positive to take, I think, from the Leeds game as well, was the fact that Moyes picked such a strong team. I mean, when you take into account that Chaffel and Ashby were ruled out through COVID, so he had no choice but to not pick them. Then you have Zouma and Ogbonna and Cresswell that were obviously ruled out for their reasons, and Benrahma ruled out for his reason. If you think about it, that other than maybe the keeper, where we've already decided that Areola is the cup keeper and Fabianski's the league keeper, that's the strongest team he could have put out. And I think we knew that Leeds were going to have a weakened team. So the fact that he still didn't let that be a factor in his decision, that he put out a strong team, considering we've got a game on Wednesday as well, I think that's a real good indication that for once, hopefully, we've got a manager that's actually going to really try and win something for us.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. And when it comes to Leeds and their depleted side, I don't really know why they're depleted. I haven't really looked into it, to be honest. But is that likely to carry through to Sunday, do you know?
Yeah, apparently it's meant to be even more so, because they've got a player that figured that suspected that it was in the cup, but is suspended for the league. And if you remember, I think he's a right back or a left back. He's definitely a full back. The guy he got from Barcelona that we were linked with, I think his name is. He went off with a relatively serious injury. So I doubt he's going to be available. So I think they're going to be even more depleted for the league game next week, which is good for us.
Massive. Well, that win has put us into the fourth round, and we were drawn away from home against the lowest ranked side left in the competition, Kidderminster Harriers. Is that the perfect draw or a potential giant killing banana skin?
I wouldn't say it's the perfect draw. It's the perfect draw for me. I'm so excited about this, because I believe it or not, I have actually seen West Ham at Kidderminster Harriers in the FA Cup. Enough, it was 1994. I put something up on my Twitter. I was actually there. Lee Chapman scored a header. So it's one of those grounds, especially as they're in the Conference North, aren't they, I think, maybe. It's one of those grounds where you think to yourself, wow, I'm never going to sort of come back here again. And the fact that I hopefully will be going back there is exciting. So it's exciting. I love that. Makes the cup for me, watching West Ham at places like that, you know, not your classic Premier League, Championship ground, but your actual lower than that ground. So I'm really excited. In terms of the size of the club, obviously they're the lowest ranked team, so you'd say yes, that's good. I think always away from home at these places, those teams are able to up their performance significantly beyond their stature. So it does have potential to be a challenging game. I think I'd feel more comfortable if it was at the London Stadium. I think if it was at London Stadium, I'd say, we should easily walk this. But then you look at the last round, you know, Morecambe gave Spurs a game, Cambridge knocked out Newcastle. You know, there was Premier League teams that fell to lower league teams, and Championship teams that fell to lower league teams. So you never know what's going to happen. But I'd like to think under Moyes, with this team and the attitude that they've got, that we're a lot more professional side now. And I just can't see the likes of Declan and others allowing a team like that to take the piss out of us, basically. So I'm hoping it's a good draw. Yeah, but with West Ham, you've always got to have a little bit of air on the side of caution when it comes to these things.
Do you think players like Deck will play?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because he might not. Having said that, you're right. He might not do. I mean, this is the perfect game for me to play Mark Noble in. you know, experienced, would have like his last season, etc. You obviously don't want Declan to get injured on a more sort of rough pitch where some of the Kidderminster players might be thinking, I'm going to make my name here and put one on the, you know, the England international type thing. So he quite possibly won't do, but all the other players around him, I mean, looking at who he played against Leeds, you think he's going to put at least a, you know, semi-decent team out, and whoever he puts out, you know, with every one of our players now is an established Premier League or international player. You'd like to think they've got the ability to be better than Kidderminster. I think the first half's always tricky. The first 15 minutes or so, as long as we can hold ourselves strong in that, should be okay. But it's, like I say, it's very hard. And that's the beauty of the Cup. The beauty of the Cup is that you get shocks. And, you know, this would be a big shock if they was to put us out.
Well, this type of game is what the FA Cup's all about, isn't it? I mean, and do you remember when we went to Wimbledon? I mean, what a fucking poxy night that was.
But that was awful.
The experience of being in that ground, though, was quite special, really. And I think we've said it before, going to grounds like that brings back the nostalgia and the magic and the beauty of what we loved about the working class element of football, growing up watching, you know, and it takes you back to that. And sometimes it's nice to step away from the modern day of big corporate shiny stadiums with all the money behind it, and taking it back to pretty much grassroots, which ain't too far off when you talk about stadiums like Kidderminster. I think it's a fantastic draw, and I was over the moon, and I was watching the draw thinking, coming in, here we go, fucking Chelsea away or Tottenham away or Man United away, as per. And then when I saw Kidderminster, I thought, wow, that's fantastic. And I just hope I can go, because as you know, it does potentially clash with a pre-booked spa break.
Mate, I think you're going to sort your priorities out.
Well, look, it's getting wanked off in a sauna or going Kidderminster with you. It's a tough one.
I'll wank you off in a sauna at Kidderminster if you want
that. That sounds like a fair compromise. All right, I'm going to tell the wife.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely buzzing for this game. I actually cheered when the draw came out because,
so nice. Like a goal, celebrate like a goal.
Yeah, exactly. Like you, some of the draw, as the draw was going on, you would see like Boreham Wood's gone. All these lower league teams were starting to go, and there was still like, you know, Chelsea hanging around, Man United hanging around, etc. And I was just thinking to myself, oh, here we go, who are we going to get now? And then when Kidderminster first, I was like, oh, go on, West Ham, go on. And I was like, yes, get in when they came out. And it's really, really weird because I've actually been thinking, I've been talking about that Kidderminster game randomly quite a lot this last week or so, just like reminiscing about the FA Cup. And, you know, when I saw that they'd done really well, I said to my kids when we were watching the, because we're house ridden at the moment because of COVID. So when we were watching the scores coming in, I said, oh, Daddy's seen West Ham win at Kidderminster, blah, 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 blah. I was just talking about it a lot. So it almost felt almost fate-like that we drew them again. And I'm absolutely buzzing. So we've got to hope the game's on. I mean, I'm still going to go anyway, so it doesn't affect me. But obviously we'd like to go with you. So I think the plan is we've got to pray the game's either Sunday or Monday. But worryingly for you, mate, on the grapevine, and I've heard it through a bit of discussion, it is going to be on the Friday. That's not through any sources. That's not confirmed or anything. That's just people speculating. But we'll have to see, won't we? We'll find out probably in the next couple of days.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that TV will make a spectacle of that game.
Well, I have to. If that game's not chosen for TV, that's just ridiculous.
Oh, massively. But that's why I'm pinning my hopes on either the Sunday or the Monday, really. But yeah, it could be the Friday, though. You're right.
It could be the Friday, mate, the first kicking off one. I mean, usually looking back, and I have done a bit of research for you on this, looking back on the games that they choose for TV, usually the Friday one isn't quite the most like, well, that's a big game or a big upset. It's usually one of the better ones, but not the best ones. The best ones tend to come on near because people are out for, you know, might be out on a Friday evening and stuff like that, might watch it if they were in. They tend to put, from what I've seen, the biggest ones on the Sunday. So let's hope that this is the case.
Yeah, and do you know what? Something inside me tells me that there's a fantastic burger review waiting to be had at Kidderminster.
Mate, someone messaged me. I wrote back to them, and they said, Kidderminster Harriers, I only went there once and it was the best pie I've ever had. And I wrote back,
really?
Yeah, and I wrote back and I said, fair play, mate. The fact that was in 1994 and you still remember it to this day. He obviously shows that it was a good pie. But, I mean, we'll have two extremes to the other because we're going to Old Trafford. We're definitely going to that at the end of January. So we'll have, like, literally the biggest club in the country with the most wealth, etc. And then we'll be able to do a burger review there. And then we'll have one... against one of the lowest league play teams probably both of us have ever been to. So it'll be interesting to take. I mean, it's important to say, actually, on the burger review, because I went to Watford away, I went to Palace away, and people are asking, where is the burger review? Just to put it out there, I don't think I can do it justice on my own. I think the burger review is a combined effort. And if I go rogue and do my own review without your sort of verification, and we always go for two sources on everything on this, podcast and this website, I feel that if I did it on my own, it doesn't do the league table justice. So the key ingredient is that you've got to start coming to away games again, which you are with Old Trafford. So hopefully the burger reviews will start again.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that you're off camera as well. So, you know, if it's just you and you're off camera and people ain't actually seeing the burger going into your mouth, I think that sort of, I don't know, weakens the experience a little bit, doesn't it? So
I mean people do like the mustard dripping down your chops as you bite into that burger.
I never even realised that's the worst fucking part. Oh my god, but you're quite right. And do you know what, you know, I hope Man United have a burger fan, because you know you think you take it for granted, but Man City didn't.
I think they do. To be fair, I think they do. Because what you got to remember about Old Trafford is that it's built in a residential area, whereas Man City was always purpose built, wasn't it, for the Commonwealth Games, etc. But Manchester United is right in the middle of, you know, towns and houses and stuff, and it's just, I know there's above had burgers there. I can picture where the burger van is. So yeah, we're going to be. I was trying to think about this earlier. What Man United game did we go to together? Because I've been to Old Trafford hundreds of times, but I knew you'd been to one, but I couldn't remember which one it was.
We went to the one where we lost 2-1 and we applauded the players like we'd won the game. Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. Who scored?
Oh God, who did score?
Oh yeah, was it like, and Snodgrass had one that was, wasn't he? I don't know, wasn't he fouled?
Did he hit the bar, Snodgrass? Do you know, it's funny you mentioned Snodgrass, because for some reason, when I think about this, he stands out for some reason. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because he scored or he hit the bar or he was the first one to come over and applaud the fans. But for some reason, he's at the forefront of my mind in that game. But we did lose 2-1.
There was something controversial with Snodgrass, definitely. Here it is. I'm having a look now. It was 2-1. And Pogba got two penalties. Something that, and it says here, but the decision to award United their first penalty when Robert Snodgrass was deemed to have fouled one Mata was contentious, and West Ham should have taken the lead in the 9th minute, but Felipe Anderson's goal was incorrectly ruled out for offside. That was the one. Yeah, 2-1. How did we get up there as well? I have literally vague memories of this game.
We drove, didn't we? It was a few of us, about four of us went up there, didn't we? We drove.
Who was it? Was it Marco and Vince?
Yeah, I can't remember who actually drove, but we did drive.
If it was with them, he always did the driving. So that'd be good to go back. I mean, I've been to Old Trafford loads of times. I've actually got some good memories at Old Trafford. I was there when Tevez scored the winner to keep us up. I was there when Di Canio scored. I was there for the FA Cup. I was there. I've also seen some terrible ones. I was there when we lost 6-0 in the FA Cup, and I was there when we were 7-1 when we actually took the lead 1-0 and then lost 7-1. I was there when Man United won the league once. I was there when Izzy Erekpin nearly made his debut but didn't get off the bench to be the youngest ever player. So, yeah, good times.
What was a greater emotion for you at Old Trafford? Di Canio scoring a winner in the Cup or Tevez scoring a winner to keep us up?
Oh, that's a good question, mate. Actually, that is a good question. Good thinking on your feet there.
I've been patronising about that response. Well done, you.
Sound like Martin Allen now, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
This time it's you getting the abuse rather than me. I don't know, actually. It's a tough one. I think probably Tevez, because it meant that we'd stayed up and we'd completed the Great Escape, and it was just so ironic that the one player that caused all this controversy then went and scored the winner. I think that probably, but then the Di Canio one was almost more of a shock, because I seem to remember Man United in the league game had like an important European game after or something like that. So they had like Giggs and Ronaldo and I think Scholes possibly on the subs bench, whereas the FA Cup, they had like their strongest team out. So it was more of a shock, the FA Cup one. But yeah, the league one probably slightly more important.
Special memories though, either way.
Yeah.
Well, before we go back to Manchester and Old Trafford, we've got Norwich at home on Wednesday. It's got to be a fourth consecutive win, isn't it?
You'd hope so. I just remember I was there for Paye's free kick as well at Man United. But yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, I wouldn't, obviously, I always say I wouldn't change a winning team. The only thing I'd possibly do, well, I guess you change the keeper. I don't necessarily agree, because I think Areola played really well. And I think soon we need to start having him as the first choice full time. However, they've obviously decided that Fabianski is the lead keeper. And bearing in mind, you know, we'd have won the last couple of games in the league, although we've conceded, we have actually won them. So I think it's a tough argument. Personally, I think I'd stick with Areola, but I think he'd go with Fabianski. So Fabianski's come back in. Then you've got a dilemma, because Schaffel could be fit. So do you bring him straight back in to right back for Fredericks? Bearing in mind, Schaffel's just had COVID, so you don't know exactly how physically it's affected him. I actually thought Fredericks played well against Leeds. Mm-hmm. So there's the argument, do you keep Fredericks in for that game or Schaffel? Not sure. And I think that's probably the only changes you would possibly make. Keep the rest the same, because yeah. I don't want to show Norwich disrespect and say, look, they're rubbish, let's rest a few players, because that's the sort of thing we'll do and then we'll muck it up. We should be beating Norwich, but Norwich do have a lot to play for. You know, they're fighting for their lives. I don't think they'll stay up, but they're going to at least try. And I don't think we should risk not playing our strongest team. I mean, if anything, you're more like better to risk it against Leeds with the amount of players they've got out than Norwich. But I think knowing Moyes, he'll go for as strong as possible in both.
Yeah, you've always got to play your best available players. And, you know, we don't know physically the condition of Schaffel. You're quite right. Because with you, you've got COVID now and you've been fit as a butcher's dog, haven't you?
I wouldn't say fit as a butcher's dog, but I mean, because I've never been that. But like, you know, like I've had it for over a week now, and for the first few days of it, I just thought I was a cold. I did a test, I tested negative, and then my wife started to feel a bit ropey on on Thursday, so she did a test and it came back positive. I was like, how the hell can I not be positive when she's now got it? And I had just the same symptoms as her. I did the test, and obviously Thursday I was positive. Annoyingly, Friday I was positive because I wanted to do the event. Saturday I was positive. I was negative on Saturday, negative on Saturday. So if I can get a negative today, which I haven't done, I should be free. But it hasn't really affected me at all, to be honest with you. I was ill about 6 weeks ago with a cold, which didn't test as COVID. I was a hell of a lot worse then than I am now. I've got a slight cough, which is why I had to put you on. I went mute a little while ago just to get it all out. I've had a slight cough. I've had a headache for a few days. I've had a slightly blocked up nose and occasionally going up the stairs, although this has happened regardless of COVID or not. I've had a bit of a tight chest, but I would have gone to the game yesterday and I'd gone to the event, and I wouldn't have thought anything about it had I not known the COVID rules. I probably would have even played football feeling like how I feel now if I was, you know, younger and playing for a team and stuff. So yeah, touch wood, I've had it very mildly.
Yeah, and that is the point, isn't it? If Schaffel is ready and physically able to play football, and he's deemed as fit enough, I think he's got to come straight back in. But he does.
Do you?
I do, yeah. Only if he is fully fit to come back in. Because,
well, Antonio played, didn't he? Straight after he had it. So you'd like to think if they're all, you know, fully fit, like they should be, then they should be okay with it, yeah.
Exactly. But look, everyone's different. Everyone gets affected differently.
Yeah.
But I'd bring him straight back in. But it does kind of raise the question that in Ryan Fredericks, you have got someone who is a pretty good squad player, really, for a couple of different reasons. One, you know, I know he's a right back slash wing back, but he is frighteningly quick. I mean, he's unbelievably quick. And in the Premier League, pace is such a key attribute to have, to a point where, and we've debated this on recent shows, whether Ryan would be a better option coming off the bench than Yarmolenko to play on the right wing. So given that, given the potential versatility, if you were David Moyes, would you actually give him a new deal?
Really torn, because I like Fredericks. I think Fredericks has never let us down. I think he, like you say, I think pace is the key attribute for a player now, and he's got that, particularly at fullback. You need to have pace, and as a winger, and I think he's got that. I think he's a decent lad. All the players seem to like him, seems to fit in with the squad well. Like you say, he's quite versatile. I like Fredericks. The only thing that is going against Fredericks is that he's number one position is right back, and you've got Schaffel, you've got Johnson, and you've got Ashby. So really, in terms of cover at positions, we've got almost as much cover at right back than we have in any other position. So it's almost by default that he's surplus to requirements in that respect, because I don't think he's a bad player. The other problem is that he's quite well paid. I mean, he's on about 75 to 80,000, because I think we signed him on about 50 grand and then with various bonuses and stuff. I mean, he's on about 70 to 80,000.
Well, we got him for nothing, didn't we? That's the problem.
This is it, and that's why your wages are always higher when you get a player for a free. But I think because of those wages and the fact we've got Ashby, who I think is a good player, Johnson and Schaffel, it's almost like we don't actually need him. So unless he can convert to a successful right winger, like you say, and be a replacement for Yarmolenko, I'm not sure technically, as was shown by two incidents when first he had a shot that was really weak straight at the keeper, and the second time when he should have cut it back to Declan and he didn't, and he tried to shoot. And I just don't know whether he's got the right, you know, skills and intelligence to play in an attacking role. So sadly, you have to make brutal decisions in football. And I think if it was down to me as the manager, I could understand why some managers want to keep him. But I think if I'm thinking, if I've got a tight budget and I've got these other players coming through, I think it should be his last season for us, if I'm honest.
In terms of Areola, are you hearing anything in relation to how he feels about ultimately being a cup keeper?
I think he's frustrated. I think not in the sense that he's going to rock the boat or anything, but I think naturally he would be frustrated because he came to the club looking to be the first team keeper here, and it seems like he's only going to play in the cup games. Now, this could change, I guess, over time, but if it was down to me, if we were starting afresh and we had no history on Fabianski or Areola, just say there were two new keepers into the club, and you're judging it on games this season and attributes that they display and their age and factors like that, I would have Areola as the first choice. But that's a little bit harsh on Fabianski, because I would say this season is better than his last season. I wouldn't say it's his best season, but I'd say he's better this season than he was last season. But I don't think he's done too much wrong. But I just think Areola is technically a better keeper. And obviously, age-wise, there's more of a future with him. I'd be happy for Fabianski to be the backup keeper. But I almost think they need to swap roles now. But it's harsh to do that to Fabianski at the moment because he hasn't let us down. But if you want the honest opinion on who I think is the better keeper, I would say that Areola just edges it. And it's funny because I've asked a couple of players that are at training and, you know, in and around the squad what they think, and they give quite a similar answer. It's that there's not much in it. But they're very, very torn. But if you're looking long-term, then Areola has more, you know, years ahead of him. So it makes more sense.
And this is what I think is a bit of a conundrum about it, because I love Fabianski. I've been a big fan of his since he joined. And I've also had his back when the chips have been down as well, because I always believed that he could come back after a kind of underperforming period, if you like. But this season, I think he's been great. He's been a good servant to us, and I think he's a good lad as well. The problem that we've got is we've got a goalkeeper here in Areola that could potentially be a world-class goalkeeper for West Ham. But because we've got him on loan, we're not necessarily going to sign him on a permanent basis unless we start playing him and showing some belief in him and letting him know that he is part of our future. And I don't know that if we give Fab a new deal, whether that could be the nail in the coffin for Areola at West Ham. And he would say, well, look, fuck this. You know, I've got player of the year at Fulham when we got relegated. So I've proved I can perform at the top level. If you look at the pedigree of the clubs that I belonged to previously, if you look at my age, I've still got a lot to give. He's going to want to almost demand a first team place now at this stage of his career and his next move. And is he going to believe that he will get that at West Ham unless he gets a steady run of games as a first team choice now? I'm not sure.
Yeah, he'd have to hope that he's bought into what we are all about here and wants to sort of and sees that Fabianski is the age that he is and would be confident in his ability that certainly next year, if not 100% the year after, he will be the number one and he'll be the number one for the next, you know, four, five, six, however many years. I think he is... obviously spent time as a backup keeper large parts of his career at PSG and Madrid and stuff. So I think he's obviously not overly against it because he's done it before. But I think he would like to think that at West Ham he'll get his chance eventually. I mean, he did a tweet or an Instagram post with him blowing bubbles kind of after the game on Sunday, and I think he is happy there. You're just going to hope that he buys into West Ham, loves the club, and can see a long-term future here. But you're right, I think he must be getting a bit frustrated because, you know, he's kept another clean sheet against Leeds. Admittedly, he didn't have much to do, but what he did do, I thought he did well. And he's going to probably, I mean, we don't know this yet because the team's not announced, but he's probably going to be dropped for Fabianski. And he must kind of think, what do I have to do here to get the number one spot?
Well, let's talk about some exciting events we've got coming up. Firstly, we play Leeds again on Sunday, and before the game is the West Ham Way pre-match event at O'Neill's, where the special guest is Colton Cole. There isn't many tickets left for this now, so if you're a patron, get your name on that list ASAP if you haven't already, and likewise if you're not a patron, then get your tickets online ASAP to avoid disappointment. I'm looking forward to that one. X, are you?
Yeah, me too. I mean, just to reiterate what you've said there are very limited tickets now. I'm close to closing it because we're on the brink of being at capacity. So if people want to get tickets, they really need to move soon because Colton's, really popular bloke, very funny, obviously works for the club at the moment as well. So we'll have a lot of inside stories. So it's going to be a great event, really, really good event. I'm buzzing for it to see Colton again. Obviously, I missed the event this weekend, so I've got even more enthusiasm to be there than perhaps I would have if I'd been this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Then we are delighted to announce that on Thursday, the 27th of January at 8 p.m, we have our first ever quarterly virtual event hosted by myself and X, where the special guest taking a live interactive Q&A from us and you will be club legend Tony Cotty. And this event is free and exclusive to patrons of the West Ham Way. So patrons, get that date in your diary because that will be a great opportunity for you to interact with Tony from the comfort of your own home. And again, X, we've been saying for a while that we're going to do this on a quarterly basis, and I'm excited to see that this month is going to be the first one with such a great guest as well.
Massive opportunity, mate. I mean, obviously, I don't want to bang on about it, but for £5, really, I mean, if you're a West Ham fan, the patrons do get a good deal here because you got the opportunity to interview yourself, one of West Ham's, you know, legends, someone who's been very involved in West Ham over the years, and particularly with the Pie Capital thing and all that. And you're going to be able to sit there from the comfort of your own home, log onto your laptop, just click into your patron membership, and ask him questions for a couple of hours, whatever it is that we've got him for, and for no extra expense, you know, all part of that £5. So hopefully people can appreciate what we're doing now to try and bring value for money. And remember, there is that competition that we've still got running for the whole of January where you refer a friend. Now, what is good news for those that have done it is that I've only had about 10 people come forward and tell me they've done it. So the odds of winning the prizes at the moment for those 10 are very good in their favour. But if others want to enter, just drop a message on the Patreon. So I've recommended my mate, my cousin, my dad, my brother, my sister, whoever. I've recommended them to Patreon. This is their name. And then if I can see that they've signed up, or they message me, say they've signed up, we had both of you into the competition. You don't want to miss out. There's so much on Patreon now that it's just, for £5, it's definitely worth sticking around with us, I think.
Absolutely. Well said. Okay, we're over a week into January now. Are we any closer to signing players? Let's hear about that and more from the man who knows. To listen to the rest of this podcast, you need to be a patron of the West Ham Way. Becoming a patron couldn't be easier. Just visit www.patreon.com/the West Ham Way and confirm your subscription to get full access to the West Ham Way podcast, our second weekly show called the West Ham Way podcast Extra Time, classic clips of audio and video interviews, exclusive news from X, match day team news before anyone else, an exclusive forum, live Q&As with myself and X, monthly prize draws, discounts on events and merchandise, and behind the scenes content, all of which for just £5 a month.
When you love riding a motorcycle, you want to ride it everywhere, even getting a dental checkup.
Mr. Carter, wouldn't you prefer the chair?
I'm fine on my bike, Doc.
Well, let me know if you feel any discomfort.
And when you love saving money, you want to save even more. That's why GEICO makes it easy to bundle your motorcycle and car insurance.
All done, Mr. Carter. Remember to brush, floss, and lubricate your drivetrain regularly.
Kickstart your savings with GEICO Motorcycle. Bundle and save on the things you love.
When you shop at a Walmart Vision Center, you get it. You know that you'll spend a little less on stylish glasses for the whole family.
Welcome to the Vision Center. Let me know if you need help finding the perfect frame.
Hey, Mom, you were right. These glasses are cool.
Hon, they take our insurance. That means Papa's getting a new pair, too.
Whoa, glasses start at just $39. Next stop, groceries.
So you can get a little more of what you need. Find a Vision Center near you. Save money, live better. Walmart.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.